Today I'll be talking about joint work that we're doing at Intel Labs with my colleagues Rob Nerhaus and Jill Pocum. And essentially we're going to be talking about how we debug real transactional memory programs. And the real is sort of a play on words here. That being, now that we have real hardware transactional memory available, what sort of complications arise from that? And the cartoon we have here, or the picture, is Gandalf behind a computer. Essentially, we're trying to make the point that unless you are Gandalf, you're going to have a really hard time debugging your transactional memory programs with the tools that exist today. Now, in all fairness, I do know that many of you in this room are actually Gandalfs. So you can talk to me after the talk and tell me how you would pull some of this off with your magical powers. So the problem is that we now have hardware transactional memory available, and we want to create a seamless debugging experience. And in order to do that, we need to be able to order the specific thread interleavings that would cause a transactional memory bug to occur. Unfortunately, with the current debugging techniques that we have, we essentially believe that it's just insufficient. And so two examples of that are if we use breakpoints and single-step debugging, this works fantastic for sequential codes. But as soon as we get into parallel codes, as many of you know, things just simply stop working. We can go ahead and pause one thread, pause another thread, but we need like a specific interleaving between those two threads, and then we're sort of stuck. So a lot of you switch to like this ad hoc I/O debugging, where you'll put printfs in your code, and that will help you be able to see some pattern. There should be some pattern recognition that will come out of the program, and then you can sort of follow the causality of events, and that will help you debug the program. This doesn't actually work that well for transactional memory for a couple different reasons. The first reason is that as soon as you do I/O inside of a transaction, that transaction becomes irrevocable, meaning the transaction can no longer be aborted. So you're moving yourself away from the original semantics that you could have with a TM program into this really sort of defined space, constrained space. And in addition, as soon as you do the I/O, you also can have probe effect injected into your program. But it's actually far worse than just that. The current HTMs that we investigated for this study are Haswell, BlueJeanQ, and SystemZ. And two characteristics of all these systems is that they're best effort and they don't provide full escape actions. So what we mean by best effort, Paul, you promised 2 minutes. Am I on 2 minutes? Okay. Okay. So what we mean by best effort is that we can't guarantee forward progress with just hardware transactions alone. So this means we have to have some sort of fallback on the software if we're going to ensure that the transactions that start executing will execute to completion, either through they may fail in hardware for illegal operations, capacity overflow, conflicts, this type of thing. And so as soon as we introduce software transactions into the picture, now any sort of debugging experience we need needs to be able to manage the interaction between hardware and software transactions. And this notably complicates the space. With escape actions, what escape actions are, essentially, it allows you to escape the context of a transaction and perform some instructions outside of the scope of the transaction that might cause conflicts. So, for example, you may want to have some bookkeeping in the transaction that's tracking the number of reads and writes, but you don't want to actually be part of the transaction. Because we don't have escape actions, the simple debugging techniques that we talked about on the prior slide, many of those actually just don't work. For example, on Haswell, an interrupt will go ahead and abort all hardware transactions. So breakpoints are sort of out of the question. I/O operations also will abort any of the hardware transactions. So suddenly that printf technique that you used for your lock-based code, it no longer applies for TM programs. Paul? That's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. That's right. SystemZ does have these certain types of transactions. They're called constrained transactions. We actually discussed them in our paper, so thank you for keeping me honest. Constrained transactions do guarantee forward progress. The problem is that they're limited in size. So we don't believe that they're generally applicable for all TM programs. Absolutely. Yeah. That's right, but it does not have the load. That's right, and that's what I mean about not having full escape actions. So we do have partial escape actions And really, we need a system that's going to build to the lowest common denominator in order to supply the full debugging experience. So even though one system does have this non-transactional store, the other systems don't. And so we still need to try to figure out like what that bottom line is. So both points are excellent. So what we propose to try to fix this problem is to use a record and replay system. I think that there are lots of different ways to do it, but record and replay, especially if it's hardware-based, we believe sort of fits this model relatively well. And what I'm talking about with record and replay is this diagram on the left that we have, where we're actually performing the recording side of the RNR in hardware. And this is really essential. For hardware transactional memory, the overhead that we would introduce if we performed the recording in software would be orders of magnitude slower, and so we would greatly perturb the original contention signature of the program if we tried to do record in software. So we really need a hardware-software co-design system in order to make debugging transactional memory programs that use real hardware actually work. And so essentially the way this works is you have a hardware system that executes the program, and it generates these log files that essentially capture the shared memory interleavings of the program. And then once all that stuff is generated, then you can replay that on a different system using some virtual system or instrumentation like PIN or that kind of thing, and allow you to replay the program as it was originally recorded. The system that we particularly try to apply for this study is the system that is actually being presented at ISCA this week. And it uses chunks for its ordering of causality between the shared memory interleavings. And chunks essentially are just a number of instructions that execute without a shared memory interleaving from another thread. So it essentially minimizes the amount of overhead you have in those log files that are generated, as opposed to like a point-to-point system, which is tracking every individual instruction. The overhead that you have in the log file is going to be pretty substantial if you do that. The second thing is we use bloom filters in our hardware. This allows us to have a relatively small impact in the hardware and still ensure that we're not going to get any false negatives. The downside of this is...
For these log files, at some point these log files are going to get large enough that you're going to have to store them somewhere.
Yes.
How are you going to prevent that buffering, the sort of backup buffering from slowing down the program and distorting the program?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And so the question is, at some point you're going to get the log files that they're so big that you're going to have to flush them out of memory and store them to the disk. And how do you guarantee that you're not going to change the contention signature by causing this stall? The truth is, there's a couple different ways. In some cases, you can actually drop some of those packets because the packets that are being generated are actually non-essential to the ordering. They're things that, right now, we generate packets for a number of different cases, like context switches and other operations that just you don't need to track. So one way to get around that is to drop some of those packets. When you can't drop the packets and you actually have to order them, you're right that it will have some side effect. And I don't know that we necessarily have a solution to that just yet. It's an open problem. But if you have ideas, please let me know. So we use bloom filters. The problem with the bloom filters that we'll talk about shortly is that they can generate false positives. And really what we need with debugging transactional memory programs is we need to be able to see the exact conflict signature between the transactions. Without that precise information, we're not going to be able to help the programmer in the way that we really want to show them where they have correctness or performance bugs. We believe that the record and replay works really well because it's already set up for detecting the conflict signature
of the
for the program. We're already using it for parallel programs today, and it allows us to do micro-scale debugging, which currently in most of the systems, and there are some special features in System Z that allow you to get a little bit more than macro-scale debugging, but it still is not really low enough for what we think you actually need. So an example of why we need micro-scale debugging is if you consider the simple example where we have a hardware transaction executing in one thread and another hardware transaction executing in another thread, and they're just conflicting on a simple variable. This conflict will cause, right now in Haswell, for example, it will cause thread one transactions to abort because it's going to use the cache coherence protocol. It's going to try to get it both into the exclusive state, and one of the transactions will abort. The problem with this is that the programmer will be notified of that there was a conflict, and, or that there was an abort, and it was the source of the abort was a conflict, but nothing else is provided to the programmer. So, if you have a transaction that accesses many memory elements, trying to identify where the actual source of the conflict is manually essentially becomes intractable. Especially if you can't see into libraries and other things like that, that you may not have control over, you really need something else that's going to give you this micro-scale debugging that tells you precisely this is where your conflict occurred, and this is what you need to fix. So unfortunately, just using record and replay by itself, it actually doesn't work. There are some modifications that you have to make in order for it to support hardware transactional memory programs. And so the first thing is we need to be able to track transactional events. Without tracking transactional events, we can get a number of false positives from shared memory conflicts that are outside of the scope of the transaction, and then they actually cause us to lose track of the real conflicts that are occurring in the TM programs. The second point is we have to modify the replayer. Because we don't have full escape actions, as soon as we try to replay that hardware transactional memory program, what would happen is the replayer would try to order the instructions of the original program, and then when it gets to the end of a chunk, it will try to stall that thread while it's inside of that hardware transaction. That stall will essentially force that hardware transaction to abort, and you're not going to be able to reproduce the original recorded program. So we need to make modifications to the replayer. And then finally, because we have to have a STM fallback or some sort of software fallback, there are going to be additional hooks that we need to add to the STM in order to make this work. So in order to handle the transactional events, essentially what you see here is just the packet structure for the RNR system that we talked about previously that's chunk-based. Right now, we believe you essentially only need three different events that are being tracked, transaction begin, transaction end, and transaction abort events. And it actually can be a little bit simpler than that. It may be that you just need the outermost transaction begin and transaction end event. And then with the transaction abort, we just store all of these types of events in the format, and then we use the reason field to tell us what type of conflict it is. So we're able to track that information. As far as the replayer, I mentioned that we need to emulate the HTM. This is because, again, we don't have full escape actions. And so this is something that needs to be modified for an RNR system to make this work. And in addition to that, you also we believe that there are also two data structures that you may need. And this is the adder map structure and this global replay data. Essentially, the adder map structure helps us overcome the issue that we have with false positives from the Bloom filter. The replayer can be perfectly precise, whereas the hardware-based Bloom filter is going to have some imprecision on conflicts. And so we use the adder map to help us identify the true conflicts and then eliminate some of the false positives that are being generated from the Bloom filter. And then we use the global replay data essentially to keep track of which thread was executing at the source of the point of the conflict to let us know what that instruction is, and then we can do a reverse lookup essentially on the adder map to tell us where that actual conflict is in the other transaction. And then finally, for the STM portion of it, we essentially have to be able to modify the STM so we can track all the transactional reads and writes in order to sort of cross-correlate those between the hardware transactions. When you have software transactions executing, this piece is very easy. And when you have hardware and hardware transactions executing, essentially you can you don't need any of the STM stuff. You can just use the stuff that's up here to get you precision. So at this point, hopefully I've convinced you that we need this additional support. One thing that my colleagues wanted me to do is show sort of an interesting case that is still open. So for many of the use cases that we've described already that are talked about in the paper, we can handle them with 100% precision. We can tell you precisely where the conflict exists and hopefully be able to allow the programmer to then debug that problem. The use case I'll show you here is actually open, and it's actually relatively simple, but it gets complicated really fast. So What we have are two transactions executing. One of them is a software transaction. One of them is a hardware transaction. The software transaction performs an access first that then is creating a conflict with the hardware transaction. But because the hardware transaction accesses it afterwards, the hardware transaction has no visibility into the STM, has no idea that it's actually causing this conflict, and it's not going to abort because the cache coherence protocol isn't going to send a message to the hardware transaction saying, hey, you need to abort. So the software transaction is what's going to eventually abort, but it doesn't get a notification immediately. It runs until, in this case, let's just assume it runs until the end of the transaction completes. So for the recording portion of this, based on the chunk-based system we talked about earlier, for the software transaction, there is no ISA hook to tell us when a transaction begins. So we don't actually start a chunk at the beginning of the atomic region. But we do when we have the hardware transaction, because we have this TX begin that we can track in the hardware, and then we can create a chunk there. So things move along merrily. We access this variable X in the software transaction. Then it's accessed again inside the hardware transaction. This actually does terminate the chunk, and this uses the backbone of the MRR infrastructure, essentially to track that there's a shared memory causality between these programs. But it does not terminate the transaction. So then when we're actually replaying this, we use the adder map that we described before. This is actually going to use the STM hooks that we talked about earlier. It will allow us to know when the atomic transaction is starting, when the software transaction is starting, and then it will, because we're instrumenting the STM, it will add all the memory memory that's being accessed inside of that software transaction. And so on the flip side, when we have the hardware transaction, we get this stuff for free. We know that all the accesses inside of the hardware transaction are part of it, so we just add those in. Again, the interesting thing here is that because this chunk does not send a notification for this transaction to abort, this thread continues to make forward progress. So the data structures that we talked about before, specifically the global replay data, no longer is a sufficient solution because it's not telling us precisely which instruction caused the conflict. It's going to continue to execute. To make matters worse, the software transaction will continue to execute and access potentially many more memory elements. Then when it finally reaches its closing scope, at that point the transaction will abort. This means that even though you do have insight into that the transaction was abort and it was created by a conflict, now you only have a list of potential candidates. You no longer have this full range of, you no longer have this precise location of this was the instruction that caused it, and this was the number of instructions that were executed in the hardware in the software transaction, and this is the point of the conflict. So it looks like I'm out of time. So that was actually essentially my last slide. The adder map is being populated specifically with the address that's being accessed in the replay, so you can't have a case where the different addresses would map to the same location. Hans, did you have a question? Don't actually deal with that yet. Yeah, not that I'm aware of.
So it's recorded and not calculated, right? So how do programs debug transaction memory today?
Oh, right. Yeah, so the question is, with R&R not being available right now, how do we debug TM right now? You have to be Gandalf, I guess. And we're sort of getting feedback, early feedback from Haswell use cases from experts in parallel, the parallel community that are really struggling trying to figure out how to debug these things. Yes. Yeah. Right now we do. So it is. It's fully serialized. But we're hoping to be able to augment that so we can have parallel chunk replay and only order them when we really need the causality being maintained between those chunks. I'm sorry. Oh, definitely. Absolutely.